Welcome to the April Citizens Climate Lobby call. My name is Mark Reynolds. I'm a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby staff, and I'm the host of today's call. 10 days ago, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act was reintroduced in Congress. This last Tuesday, there was a press conference with the lead sponsors, Representative Deutsch, Representative Peters, my member of Congress, Representative Crist, and Representative Chu. Representative Chu specifically gave a shout out to the Pasadena Foothills chapter. So congratulations to everybody in that chapter. She was definitely expressing her partnership with you. Also speaking was our president, Madeline Parra, who did a great job of representing us. And I think that was really an expression of not just our partnership with Representative Deutsch, but really with all of Congress. We're really happy about the bill. We're happy that it's the best tool available to get us to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. That it'll make clean energy affordable, that it will put money in Americans' pockets with no restrictions on how they spend it, and in particular about how good it will be for people's healths. So it's not just the reduction in emissions you get, but you get all the other bad things that happen from carbon pollution, which means this will be extremely beneficial to frontline communities that have borne really an unnecessary amount of the effects of carbon pollution. Here's what's going to happen today. In just a moment, I'll be introducing our guest, who we're really thrilled could make it with us today. After our guest comments, our Vice President of Government Affairs, Dr. Danny Richter, will join us to give us an update on where we are with the bill, co-sponsors, et cetera. And then I'm going to go over some of the things that have been happening recently. And by the way, y'all been really busy making lots of stuff happen. I'm excited about reporting on that. Then we'll go over what we're doing this month. And maybe the most important thing I'll let you know today is that the June conference is open for registration. So when we're done today, you could actually go to our website and register for the Push for a Price on Carbon conference, which is going to be happening on June 12th and 13th. Our guest today is Reverend Franklin Ruft, who's the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Stillwater, Kansas. He is a conservative who believes that we can do a better job of working with each other, and in particular, people that we disagree with. You know, I did not come to Citizens Climate Lobby from an advocacy background. I was in a business background, and the work I was doing was on the area of productivity and effectiveness, both to the public and with companies. And we were working on a new program just before I came here on how teams could work together more effectively. And I asked one of my colleagues, I said, Erin, what is the problem working with other people? And she said, other people are the problem, which I think is the way we look at it sometimes, that our issues in working with other people is over there. And maybe we could do a better job of looking at ourselves and how we relate to other people. So Pastor Ruff, thank you so much for joining us. I'm so happy you could be here on a Saturday, particularly with three little kids. It's not always easy to make time for something like this, but we're thrilled you could join us today.
Well, thank you very much. The three little kids are at a football game with the youth pastor, which is why it's so quiet right now. I want to thank you all for having me today. I think that the work that's being done here is important. I also think that it's important that we understand the need to work with others, and more importantly, look at how we see others. And my passion, and all of us have our passions, my passion is depolarization. I work with an organization called Brave Angels. And the two words that I focus on when I talk about work like that are humanity and humility. Humanity in the fact that regardless of who we're looking at, we need to remember that that person that we're looking at is a human being. Now, from my perspective as a Christian and as a pastor, I look at someone and I see someone who is made in the image of God. But regardless, we need to be looking at each other and acknowledging the humanity of the other person, that they need to and should be treated as a human being. And humility, that's one that gets us in trouble a lot, because there are a few things that come with humility. One, the admission that we may not have all the answers. We don't have all the answers. The admission that someone may have a better idea than us, and the admission that on some things we may actually be wrong. So what I want to do is I want to look at this, say hi to Chelsea. I want to look at this through the eyes of climate and through the eyes of organizations that are doing what CCL is doing. So when I look at humanity and humility, I see that there are four basic types of individuals that you could potentially run into. And the first is the individual that believes and sees the world similar to what you see it. And that's the last group we're going to talk about. Let's start with those individuals that say that, okay, this is important. What you're doing is important, but it's not my issue. And sometimes because we are so passionate about an issue, because we advocate so much for an issue, we don't understand why these other individuals don't see the importance of the issue that we love and that we are so passionate about. Now, it may not be that they don't see the importance. It's just not their issue. Perhaps their issue is human trafficking. Perhaps their issue is depolarization. Perhaps their issue is animal rights. Perhaps they have other types of issues that they see as important. They aren't saying that your issue isn't important. They're just saying that it isn't their issue. And sometimes it's hard to look at a person and say, how is it that you can't see this? How is it that you can't see how important this is? And we fail to see that person's humanity because they aren't seeing our issue. And so we fail to be humble and understand that while our issue is important, it's very important, there are other issues out there that are important as well. And it may not be that person's thing. Second group are the individuals who are ambivalent. And I know with issues that are important to me, when people are ambivalent, it sort of drives me crazy. Once again, we need to see the humanity in those individuals as well and have the humility to understand that what's important to us, although it's very important, it's we're talking about a global issue, it's everyone's not going to see it that way. And also, there may be reasons why. Now, on February 16th of this year, I lost my wife. And I have three sons, 10, 9, and 8. But I'm also very lucky. I'm surrounded by people who help me. I'm surrounded by people who love my boys. I'm surrounded by individuals who help to lift me up. I work in a vocation where I have flexibility and I can go to the parent teachers conferences and the sporting events. But what if I didn't? I can assure you, if I didn't, that the last thing on my mind would be climate. The last thing on my mind would be dealing with depolarization. I would be focusing on my children. So that ambivalence might be not that I don't think that it's important, it's just not important to me in my daily life. And we have to have the humility to understand that everyone doesn't have the privilege to be an advocate or an activist for those things that are important to us. And that final group, those are the individuals that just don't see it. They don't believe it. It's not an issue at all. These are human beings. They are deserving of the human dignity that all of us want. And then the humility to understand that these individuals are not individuals that don't care about clean air. They have to breathe it too, or clean water. They have to drink it as well. They just don't see the importance of the issue for whatever reason. We have to be humble enough to be willing to approach and dialogue and sometimes just walk away. Because what that does is when we approach individuals, even those that are diametrically opposed to us, with humanity and humility, other people see it. You might sway that ambivalent person. You might sway that person that has other priorities, that your priority is important as well, because they see how you approach others. Finally, let's talk about those people that agree with us, that see the world in the same way that we do. Humanity is easy with them because we see someone that's like us. Humility still can be difficult because what happens is maybe they don't see the issue the same way. Maybe they don't have the same solution. I'm a conservative. I believe in climate change. I believe that it's an important issue. Where we might disagree is on the role that human beings play in that. The number. What percentage do human beings play in this? That's irrelevant. We both want to fix the problem. So we have to have the humility to say, okay, we disagree on this small point, but we want to fix the issue. So we're going to fix the issue. We have to have the humility to say that someone might have a good idea that's just as good as our idea. Or guess what? Someone might have an idea that's better than our idea. That takes humility. Humility is hard, but in order to truly achieve the goals that we want to achieve, in order to truly come together as a people, we have to look at each other as human beings. We have to give each other the human dignity that we want to receive, and we have to be humble. Yes, we might have good ideas. Someone else might have them as well. They might have better ideas. And yes, the fact is, about something, we are all wrong about something. We have to have the humility to understand that. Thank you very much.
Wow, thank you so much. Was this like something that came to you over time? Was there an epiphany? Was there a moment that kind of changed the way you looked at people and others? Or can you tell me about your own journey of arriving where you are now?
Okay, I'm gonna let Chelsea join us
because she's.
This came over time. It came over time. Me in my 20s was a lot more strident, a lot more sure of everything. I knew it. I knew it all. And if you didn't agree with me, you were just wrong. As I have matured and grown older and spent time with different types of people. Different people in different environments. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. The first church I served was in Greensburg, Kansas. There were 730 people in Greensburg. There were probably more than 730 people in the neighborhood I grew up in Detroit. And none of them looked like me either. And so over time, being exposed to different people in different environments, I began to see, okay, maybe there are different ways of doing things.
Great, great. Well, let me open up to the questions that are out in the field so far. Flannery, do you want to start with a couple of questions?
Sure. Sorry to give you a tough one right off the bat. we've had some questions wondering how this philosophy or this approach holds up when you come across individuals who maybe their issue is white supremacy or fearing losing their maybe status in society. How does that kind of interact with that question? And again, sorry to give you a tough one right off the bat.
That white supremacist is still a human being. That white supremacist is still worthy of human dignity. Even though that white supremacist doesn't think I'm worthy of the human dignity. I would ask that people look up a gentleman by the name of Darryl Davis. Darryl Davis is a Black man who actually sat down with members of the Ku Klux Klan. He sat down and he had conversations with them. Now, because of that, over 230 Klan members are now former Klan members. Because what happened was they began to see that thing that they hated and realize, oh, wait a minute. What the caricature I have in my mind and the person are different. Now, that's not always going to work. But the question is it worth the try? And again, the humility to understand that we don't know the circumstances of which that person has gone through to get them to where they are.
Mm. Nice. What else you seen there, Flannery?
I think we'd also love to just hear a little bit about how this comes to life in your work with Braver Angels. You mentioned that you're some folks in CCL are familiar with that organization, but could you just tell us a little bit more about how this comes to life and the conversations that organization puts together?
Okay, so Braver Angels is a grassroots organization that tries to bring together people of different political stripes. We use the language of red and blue, reds being people who are more conservative, blues being people who are more liberal. And then you also have the purple, the more people who are more purplish. The fact of the matter is that on most issues, not all, but on most issues, we want the same things. We just have a different way of getting there. And on other issues, there's just we just don't see eye to eye. But what you find is if you sit down and you have that conversation with that person who doesn't have the same worldview than you, you still begin to see that person as a human being. And you, I guarantee you, most of the time you learn something. That's the most important thing. Most of the time you learn something. The biggest problem that we have, I think, is that we very seldom get outside of our own bubbles, get outside of our own cheerleading squads who agree with us and who are saying that we're great and that we're wonderful and that everything that we believe is right. Take the time to sit down with that person that sees the world a little bit differently. And that's what Braver Angels promotes is, let's get away from this polarization and let's start to see the people that we look at as the other, whether they're conservative or whether they're liberal, let's start to see them as human beings and as people who have needs and have wants and have and who have families that they love and want to achieve just like the rest of us want to achieve. And of course, as a member, I would encourage anyone to look into it because I think it's a great organization.
That's my
plug for today.
No, we agree with you. We've had thousands of our members go through the programs because we are big fans. You know, one of our most important, let's just say, customers, constituencies is Congress. If you were going to be meeting with members of Congress from both sides of the aisle, are there things that you can take from your work and see how we might increase our effectiveness with the members of Congress and their staff for that matter? Because they're Washington, D.C. is a tough place to work. Mm-hmm. And it's designed to kind of make people worse, you know, by reinforcing, really ultra reinforcing people's own view. So how might you directly apply our work to members of the House and Senate?
Okay, I hope I don't get myself in trouble by answering this question. The first thing that I would do is the first people I'm not going to go to directly is the leadership. Because the leadership in Congress has a vested interest in polarization. I might start with people like the Problem Solvers Caucus, mm-hmm. or individuals, depending on if it's climate, individuals that have shown an interest in my issue. But I'm going to start with those that might have a little bit of influence. They aren't necessarily in leadership, but are willing to. They show an interest in the desire to work across the aisle. In terms of senators, and this is going to sound so cynical, but I'm going to go to the newly elected ones because they don't have to run again for 6 years. So they might be a little bit more open to taking risk. But I'm going to go to the Joe Manchins, the Mitt Romneys, the, like I said, on the other side of the aisle, the Problem Solvers Caucus, and try and start there rather than starting in leadership.
Great. Pastor, if I just want to say, I think your message is so important for us. And I think it's something that we need to be, it's like a lifelong ambition. It isn't something where you say, okay, well, I got the humanity and humility thing down. You know, it's something that you have to, you know, go to work with on a regular basis. And it's kind of like, you know, you can't say, well, I exercised last week, I'm done. You know, it's like it's something you have to keep at it. So is there anything you can tell us about what allows you to you know, stick with it?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I don't always succeed. That's that's the first message that I want to point out there, is that this is hard work, it's difficult, and sometimes you fail. One of the things that makes it easy for me is a few things. First, my wife and I had different political beliefs, but we loved each other. And so there was that care and that love for each other. We only voted for president out of 7 presidential elections. We only voted for the same person twice. Mm. Second is, no matter where I am, I'm a minority. If I'm back in Detroit, back home, everybody looks like me, but they don't think like me in terms of politics. Where I am now, as a pastor, almost nobody looks like me, but we have some of the same politics. The way that you do it is you just have to keep doing it, understanding that occasionally you're going to fall down, and you have to be open to being uncomfortable. Mm. Because here's the thing that will let you know whether you're doing this or not. If in every conversation that you have, especially political conversations, you're always comfortable, then you need to find more different people to talk to. Hmm. Because it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to make you question. It's going to make you think. And in some cases, it may strengthen your position. In other cases, you might step back and say, oh, well, maybe I need to give more thought to that. But you have to be open to being uncomfortable, and you have to be open to understanding that sometimes, yes, you are going to fail, because there are some people that for various different reasons, they're difficult to talk to. Daryl Davis, who I brought up earlier, I'm not going to do what he does. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely no desire to be anywhere in the vicinity of a Ku Klux Klan meeting. I'm not going to, and I admit that, I'm not going to do it. Thank God he exists and he can do it. So there are certain conversations that, because of where we are emotionally or mentally, we're not going to be able to have, and we have to know that. So we have to know ourselves, and the rest, we have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And once again, look at that person and say, you know what? I totally disagree with where you're coming from, but that's a human being. And I also need to have the humility to understand I can still learn something from you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Pastor Ruff. I think your message is so important. It's one that our membership will embrace and really, you know, continue to work with themselves on. You're certainly welcome to stick with us the next 15 or 20 minutes for what we do the second half of the call. But I know that you have 3 little kids, and probably joining them at the football game sounds like a good idea also. But thank you so much for making yourself available today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and keep doing the work that you're doing.
Great. We will. Thank you so much. All right, I want to invite Dr. Danny Richter to join me. Most of you know Danny as, you know, our famous guy in DC, right? But what most of you probably don't know is Danny was one of the original 6 group leaders. So there were originally 3 chapters in California, 3 chapters in Washington State. And Danny was the first leader of what we call the La Jolla chapter, which was all people working on their PhD at Scripps Institution of Oceanography. And so while Danny was finishing his PhD, he was our head of research. So we had someone who was, you know, a full-time grad student, but every time we needed something evaluated, Danny would turn it around, and it was great work. And we're like, okay, we better make sure this guy doesn't get away. So we started talking to him about him early on as if, you know, could you please join the company when you're done? And it was at Danny's own initiative that he decided to move to Washington, D.C. So we never asked him to do that. It's just something he saw needed to be done. And if you can imagine setting up a shop in D.C. with no roadmap, you know, I'm just going to go do this thing and everything you deal with that. And now we've built this really beautiful organization throughout the country and with a very strong shop in D.C. So I imagine some of you didn't know all of that background, but Danny, thanks for joining us today. What can you tell us about where we are with the bill and co-sponsors, et cetera?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mark, for that kind introduction. And hello, everybody. Thank you for being here. There's actually some pretty exciting stuff to report on the legislative side of things. First, let's remember our goal, our imperative, is to make sure that there is a carbon price, especially a carbon fee, carbon tax, in the final climate package that is coming later this year. President Biden has introduced his original infrastructure/climate package, And though it did not include a carbon price, there is still a lot of politics to happen between here and passage. So it is still very much undecided as to whether the final package includes a carbon price. And in fact, just yesterday, you have reports that John Kerry, President Biden's special presidential envoy for climate, saying both that, and I quote, President Biden believes that at some point in time, we need to find out a way to have a price on carbon that's effective. He also said, quote, he hasn't decided or made an announcement about it, but we all know that one of the most effective ways to reduce emissions is putting a price on carbon, end quote. While we are doing our best to support all carbon pricing bills, the fact is that the policy the most likely to attract the most co-sponsors and thus to have the best shot at making an impression on the conversation is the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. This bill was reintroduced a week after our March lobby week, and we actually heard from the Deutsche office that, in fact, the introduction was delayed because during our lobby week, they were hearing from so many members of Congress that they wanted to be co-sponsors. And that is the best possible reason to delay bill introduction. They wanted to make sure that more could get on. So thank you for your good work making sure so many co-sponsors were on as an original. In the end, 28 original co-sponsors were on when the bill was reintroduced. And compare that with last Congress, it was reintroduced with 6 original co-sponsors. So it's starting this Congress with 4 times as many original co-sponsors. And in the week since it was introduced, it's already added 7 more co-sponsors. So we're going at a blistering clip. Of course, we all know that the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act finished the last Congress with 86 co-sponsors. And you might be wondering why the gap. Well, Congressman Deutsch really wanted a Republican to get on. And he was expecting any Republican who might get on board to want changes to the text. And it's really hard to recruit co-sponsors to a bill when you don't have the final text, even if they were co-sponsors the last time. And Congressman Deutsch made the decision that he had to introduce to make sure it had an opportunity to influence the discussion of the coming climate package. He finalized the text, and he only had so much time to go back to former co-sponsors. So that's why there's the gap. It's because Congressman Deutsch held out so long for a Republican co-sponsor and because he was willing to make changes to get one. This number also needs a little bit more of context. If you look at the 11 other carbon pricing bills introduced last Congress, the one with the next most co-sponsors was Representative Larson's America Wins Act with 9 co-sponsors. So this bill started on day one of this Congress with 3 times as many co-sponsors as the next closest carbon pricing bill managed to scrounge up for an entire 2-year Congress. The reason that it's doing so well is very simple, and it is because of the volunteers in this organization and because of the relationships they've built with their members of Congress. Another exciting component of this bill is that the emissions target has been updated to net zero by 2050. We heard there was some confusion about whether or not the bill alone could get us there, and the answer is no. This bill alone will not get us there. It is not a silver bullet. As we've been saying for years, it is the best first step. We will need other complementary policies to pass sometime over the next 29 years to reach the goals in the bill, and CCL has already started doing that. Remember, we helped pass into law the Use It Act, the BEST Act, and the Climate Ready Fisheries Act late last year. CCL is going to continue to select, advocate for, and pass complementary policies to make sure that we get to that target. I'll also remind you that, as we heard from Dr. Noah Kaufman on our January call, the author of the Columbia University study on the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act and currently working in the Biden administration as a senior economist at the White House Council of Economic Advisors, that this price and rate of increase is consistent with a net zero by 2050 target. I'm referring specifically to his near term to net zero paper recently published in the journal Nature Climate Change. However, Dr. Kaufman is careful to point out in that paper the complementary policies are needed, even if you have that initial price and rate of increase consistent with that target. Complementary policies are needed in the long term to achieve the goal. CCL, we remain an organization that trusts experts. And so that's what we're saying. We need complementary policies to get to net zero by 2050. So to summarize, it's been an exciting month. The contents of the final climate package is still not decided. We still have an opportunity to make sure that the necessary policy for ambitious climate policy is part of it, carbon price. Biden and his administration would like to see a carbon price, but they have not announced that desire. And while we continue to try and raise the popularity of any carbon price, the policy that has the best chance of getting the most co-sponsors within this Congress is the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It has been reintroduced with an impressive number of co-sponsors, and this is likely to be our greatest tool for demonstrating the popularity and effectiveness of carbon pricing. And we've already had a significant impact on the support it has. So let's keep it up.
Danny, do you mind taking a couple of questions?
Sure. Always happy to take questions.
Good. Flannery, if you just check and see if there's anything that's kind of thematic there. Let me just ask you the start though, Danny. The four lead co-sponsors, Deutsch, Chu, Crist, Peters, anything that we should add about those four?
Yeah, it's an impressive list of Democrats. You have senior Democrats, and they are on the three committees of jurisdiction, which the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act was again referred to, House Ways and Means, House Energy and Commerce, House Foreign Affairs, and you also have someone on the important Science Committee. So you have senior Democrats on the right committees. So this really is an important show of force here.
Great. Flannery, are there themes you're seeing?
Yeah.
We got a cat and a child on this month's call. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is Mira.
Hi, Mira. Go ahead, Flannery.
Folks are wondering, Danny, if you could just at a high level sort of run through the significant changes that are in the bill compared with the last version of the bill.
Yeah, sure. The biggest change is the net zero by 2050 target. Next, you have the removal of the fee on fluorinated greenhouse gases. And that's because in the same COVID relief package that also included the BEST, the Use It, and the Climate Ready Fisheries Act, you also included... legislation to remove, to price fluorinated greenhouse gases to bring us in line with the Kigali Amendment. So I think that's really important. The regulatory pause has been removed from the bill. That's completely gone. And the reason, Mira, come on. The reason for that is that because it doesn't have a Republican initial co-sponsor, that's something ready-made for a Republican to say, I got this. This is what I got in my negotiations, so they can message to their constituents, so they can win re-election. This is what I earned in this bill for Republicans. So those are the biggest changes. There's some other ones. We have a one-page handout for our volunteers to share with their members of Congress to review for themselves, summarizing those and other changes to the bill.
Okay, one more, Flannery, and then we'll let Danny get back to trying to manage his household.
Sure. We've got a couple just process questions. People wondering if carbon pricing fits within the budget process and how that might look.
Yeah, it's easy, very easy. With the budget process, and I assume this is referring specifically to reconciliation. And so for reconciliation, if you're going to pass it, it's budget reconciliation. So it has to have an effect on the budget. And, a carbon fee or a carbon tax, that has an effect on the budget. I don't think that you would be able to have 100% dividend. I think that if you're in the context of reconciliation, you probably need to have some of the revenue go to other uses. Certainly that's a big interest for Democrats, but you can still get a huge chunk of it going back as dividends. So you can't say the same for a lot of other policies. The first one that comes up in these types of conversations, the clean energy standard, that's a much bigger stretch to include in budget reconciliation. But I also want to say again, we've been focused on regular order. That's the normal way of passing bills. And with Joe Manchin this week said, not only is he not going to support removing the filibuster or weakening the filibuster, but he really put an emphasis on getting away from reconciliation in his Washington Post op-ed. And that really says, I think that Democrats are going to have to try a bipartisan regular order process first. And so I'm feeling good about our focus on that process. because there is a lot more opportunity for bipartisanship, as Senator Manchin pointed out in his op-ed.
Great. Annie, thanks so much. Thanks for staying a little bit extra to handle questions and tell Mira she actually made the call a little bit better. Not to encourage her for next Saturday, but okay. Thanks so much. All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over what we're doing this month and then go over some of the things that have been happening recently. And as I said at the start of the call, you have been really busy doing some good stuff. So what are we doing this month? You know, a lot of people have been asking how we can reach out to Biden specifically. You know, we see the people in the administration who are obviously favorable towards what we're doing. You've heard Yellen's comments. You probably heard Buttigieg before, Kerry. And now we know Noah Kaufman, who was our speaker in January, is part of the administration. So we have people there, but we want to reach Biden himself. So Ashley Hunt Martirano found a firm that if you use their app, which you could do on their phone or your computer, they'll actually print a postcard and send it to the president. And so far, 439 people have done that. And this organization has given us kind of an in-kind donation of the first 3,000 postcards are free. So the instructions are in the action sheet. And we're really going back to old technology and just saying, you know, if we can get a postcard, and hopefully President Biden, like Obama used to do, is just read some of the correspondence every week, that we can get President Biden's attention by getting just an old-fashioned postcard. Again, the app allows you to write the postcard on your phone or your computer. Please follow the instructions very clearly. And if anything happens, just reload the app. There's been a few people got a glitch, but they reloaded the app and it worked well. Also, this is a great opportunity for us to do outreach. There's all the additional attention that happens with Earth Day and Earth Week. So we should be able to reach out, grow our memberships, grow our chapters as we start getting a little bit closer to maybe some type of normalcy in the distant horizon. And then just as a reminder, this isn't on the action sheet this month, but this is always the best month for getting letters to the editor and op-eds published. So because Earth Day will draw so much attention to additional attention to our issue, you know, let's really make sure we're ramping up the effort in that area and just submitting everything we can to our newspapers. Okay, so what are some of the things that have happened recently? Well, in Oregon, the Oregon Senate passed SJM-5, which is a bill supporting the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It passed with 60% of the Republicans in that chamber. So it was every Democrat worked for it and 60% of the Republicans. So congratulations to everybody who worked on that. That's a big deal. That's kind of a shining star of bipartisanship out there. So thank all of you in Oregon for doing that. The Canadian Supreme Court, by a 6-2 vote, upheld Canada's law, which is the closest federal law to what we've been proposing for a long time. So that was really great news. This last month, we got 268 letters to the editor published and a total of 519 submitted. So thank everybody for submitting. Because we have upgraded tools, we have a better way of reflecting all the activity that happens, not just the ones that got published, but the ones that were submitted also. In 2020, during the first 70 days of 2020, there were 1,093 calls to Congress. This year, in the same time period, the first 75 days of the year, there were 5,472. So last year, 1,093. This year, 5,792. So that's a big deal. We have 277 people registered for our business conference next week. So for the Business Climate Leaders team and everybody who's worked on that, thank you for that great work. We've had 402 meeting reports so far for our March lobbying, which some of it trailed into this month also. So over 402 meeting minutes so far. Good work on that. Thank you, everybody who did all the work to put all that together. And then we're working with an organization that allows us to get multiple radio interviews in one day. So actually, we had one of our conservative members in one day do 8 radio programs in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky. So that was nice for us to get a hit, one of our conservative members, 8 radio stations in one day, reaching people that we ordinarily wouldn't reach. And then again, just as I started the conference, you can open the pathway to a price on carbon. I mean, the Push for a Price on Carbon, June 12th and 13th conference. You can register for that today. Hopefully, looking forward to see as many of you as possible. Thank you all. Thank you again, Reverend Ruff, for being our guest and for everybody who was on today. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great month. We'll see you in May.